comes to technology, we are the knights of the kingdom of geekery. We rise up when it comes to the challenge of discussing all this nerd knowledge. We are the digital soup. We are the digital soup. We bring information with lots of laughter. Tune in now if that's what you're after. Digital soup. We are the digital soup. We are the digital soup. With Jason, Adam, and usually Dara.
All right, and welcome back to Digital Soup, the only podcast that will stop you and spit in your eye. Right?
Is this a Bohemian Rhapsody reference?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yes.
Ding, ding, ding. You are a winner, Adam.
You've been using obscure references for your
very
intro
much
jokes.
So.
Yeah, you know what? I tried to see who the real intelligent people are. And Dave, you failed, of course. Adam, you did pass. So you are on almost the same intellectual. I can't even say it, so that's bad. Intellectual level. You know, if I'm doing a joke, I should be able to pronounce it right, especially when I'm talking about me smarts.
You should be able to, but
true.
Yeah, and I fail constantly.
Yep.
Well, everybody, this idiot over here, my name's Jason, and joining me in the virtual studio today is Adam and usually Dave. How's it going, gentlemen?
Going great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. You guys never ask.
I did.
I always ask about you, and then you guys just tell me how it is, and then we go about it. But you actually stopped and asked me. Oh, I feel so
special. Yeah, okay.
So
anyways, what do we have going on today?
It seems like we have more than just us three here, though.
Yes.
I do hear some heavy breathing in the background.
Oh, jeez.
I'd like to introduce...
That's nice. You can't say that about the guest.
All right, and over on the fourth mic today, we have Barry Leach. He has been writing music for games, you know, since around 86. Wow, Adam wasn't even born then.
Yes, I was.
Hello.
Yeah, barely did it. Hey, I got some more intro here for you, Barry. Let's just settle down
a little bit.
Sure. I know you want to jump in, but...
Just saying hi.
I got to let the peeps know who you are, and then you get to come out like you're on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Because it's literally the same thing.
Exactly. Now, his first game was published when he was only 15 years old, and it was on the Commodore 64, and it was a game called, and I want to say iCups. Is that how you pronounce it?
Pretty much. It's close enough.
Okay. Well, my daughters would say I-C-U-P. Anyways. He's written music for every game publisher that has existed in the 80s and 90s. Some examples would be like Gremlin Graphics, Ocean Software, Origin Systems, which is part of Electronic Arts, Boss Game Studios, Atari Games, and that is the original Atari. Come on now. That's awesome. Before moving on to Fisher-Price Toys in 2000, creating audio for, you know, the different toys. Since then, he's gone freelance in 2004. He's been providing audio for toys and games, including the new Horizon Chase Turbo, which I got a chance to play, and I came in first place. Adam and Dave, last place every time. He's also done the Dark Quest series and about, you know, I don't know, what would you say, about 430 other titles, something like that. Barry, why don't you go ahead and say hi to the people?
Hello.
After that big intro, I was like,
yep.
Hi, my name's Barry.
You know that first level on Horizon Chase is really easy, right?
I know. No, that was level 72 I got the first place.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
So, you are correct.
I just want to make a comment here. Chances are, if you haven't heard Barry's name, you've heard his music, if you've got any kind of history in gaming, as far as going back into the Atari days and stuff, or if it's... Because you worked for Fisher-Price for a while, right?
Yeah. I think between games and toys, I would... bet money, at least a couple of bucks, that everybody's heard at least one of my tunes at some point.
A pretty insane resume there.
Yeah. And he also, a little known fact, he did do the voice for the Good Guy doll.
Oh, jeez.
The Good Guy doll.
I've done some more embarrassing projects than that, trust me.
Hey, that's not embarrassing. That's cool, especially, you know, Chucky's big again now with this new movie coming out.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But yeah, we have a lot of stuff we want to ask our guests here today. And why don't we let Adam start out? Because as everybody in the show knows, Adam and Dave are musicians. They've been lifetime musicians, been in many, many great bands, kicked out of even more great bands. I'm sure they want to know, you know, how he started. Why don't you kick this bad boy off?
Sure, I certainly will. Now, if you hear any of the totally sweet music that is on this show, usually it's Jason. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, I have done some sweet music on this show.
I try to do some composition stuff, but when I guess one of the questions I wanted to ask you, and I know, Jason, you're talking about history and stuff, and maybe mm-hmm. we'll touch on that, but just the creative process that you kind of go through when it comes to how do you approach a game where there's no, you know, this isn't like a pop song where you've got a 3 to 4 minute play time. This is something that's going to be on a continuous loop. How do you approach that kind of style of, you know, when you're composing or putting together a piece of music, you know, for a game?
Well, usually what I'll try and do is I'll try and write something. I love to write pop songs. Don't get me wrong. I love to write just a nice simple verse, chorus, melody, you sure. know, that'll stick in your head like bubblegum. I love writing that stuff. But you're going to hear it so many times in these games. Mm-hmm. So I try and keep building the sound out. I probably put too much in the tunes, you know, when I've got arpeggios and other stuff going on, counter melodies. So even when you hear it for, you know, the 20th, 50th, 100th time, maybe your ear will catch something different that you haven't listened to before or followed along.
And that's some of the stuff I like about a lot of your music. And, some of it's really complex to the point where there's a lot of people on YouTube that are covering your songs and they're like, you know, a guitar virtuoso covering, yeah, trying nuts, to cover a song. It's what does that feel like?
it's incredibly touching. It's amazing. And it was, there's a guy in Brazil called Nino Mega Driver. He contacted me in like 2003 or so. And mm-hmm. he's like, hey, I can play your Top Gear music from the Super Nintendo. I can play it on the guitar. And I was like, no way. There's no way anybody can play that guitar. He's like, no, I can. And he sent me a video of him playing it. And I was like, holy cow, he can play it.
That's incredible.
And so out of all the games I worked on, Top Gear in South America as a whole is just incredibly famous. It's the most popular one. It's as famous as Mario in South America.
Wow.
Which blows my mind because to me it was another driving game. Mm-hmm. I spent 5 days doing the music for it. It wasn't anything that I really spent a lot of time or gave a lot of thought to.
Sure.
And it became the most popular one.
Wow.
And so because everybody down there knows it. I mean, I tried this. I went up to a policeman in the street. I was getting my picture taken with the policeman, as you do when you're in Brazil.
Yeah, and, sounds common.
And we asked him, we're like, hey, do you know the music to Top Gear? And he's like, the video game? Oh, yeah, I played that.
Shit. You know what? If we were to go up to a police officer around here, go, hey,
quit resisting.
Yeah, do you know the music to Double Dragon? Get in the back of the car.
It depends. Some of them might say, you know what? I might not remember the music, but I remember the game.
Yeah.
And then he you know, does a couple punches to your midsection and throws you over his head.
Yep.
Because it's Double Dragon.
He grabs you by the head and gives you the knee to the face.
You know, but speaking of Double Dragon, though, Adam there, but Barry, didn't you do music for Double Dragon?
We did one version of it on the Commodore 64 cartridge. I don't know if it ever got released. I think it was for Ocean Software.
Okay. I didn't even know the Commodore 64 had cartridge.
They did in the very beginning, and then it was about 1990, 91, I think. There was a resurgence of the cartridges. People were, because they couldn't pirate them, so they were like, oh, put games on cartridges. Kids can't copy them.
Oh, now they can pretty easily.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no Dave problem. Knows about that. He'll tell you all about it later.
Yeah, the non-tech guy of the show. Clearly the guy to go to for that.
So when you were creating, when you first started, what did you do? What did you use to record your songs or to get them built?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, that started in the Commodore 64.
Okay.
I had been messing around with sound on computers for a couple of years before that. In Britain, we had this computer called the BBC Model B, which just had an AY sound chip. It would basically, it could beep. But it could beep on three channels at one time, so you could play three notes at the same time.
Sounds beautiful.
It's enough to make a chord, though.
Yeah, and it was a good chance to learn how to put music on computers. And I got to admit, I wanted to play the keyboard so badly, but I suck at it. I'm really bad at playing piano. So for me, putting on the computer, it was like, oh, this is great. I can just program the computer and have it do it, and I won't have to learn how to play piano.
So fast forward to today, and what kind of tools do you use for modern music building?
I use Renoise, which is a tracker-based DAW, digital audio workstation. Okay. It's very much like the way the tracker systems evolved on the Commodore Amiga. It was a very efficient and clean way to write music, so you knew exactly what was going on all four channels at the same time. And Renoise is just that taken to the nth degree. It's incredibly powerful, and I love it way better than... It's so faster than any other DAW that I've come across.
Is that a Windows program?
Yeah. Okay. It's, it works on Windows, Mac, Linux.
We use kind of a mix of things here. I use Reaper for my main DAW. Could never afford Pro Tools because I'm an amateur, but as far as the electronic music, I know there's a lot of folks that use like, you know, Fruity Loops program and things like that. Has this kind of, has an updated software like Renoise completely changed, you know, and sped up the process of your creativity?
I mean, yeah, yes and no. I mean, before you only had four channels, so, you know, there was only so many notes you could put in it. I mean, now I've got unlimited amount of channels and I've got every sound imaginable. So you can spend a lot of time. I think on Horizon Chase, I spent more time looking for the right sounds to use than I did creating all the music for Top Gear.
Wow. So do you end up, when you're writing these songs, do you end up, do you make them so that they can be perfectly looped together end to end?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And then I have to do a separate version if I'm doing CDs or OSTs, you know.
Sure.
That's always a pain in the ass, because then you got to go back and put an end note on it or something. Just a da at the end.
Finalize it.
Well, since we've been mentioning Horizon Chase here a little bit, why don't we use that as our first track? We'll play a little example here so our listeners can hear what it sounds like. What I have here, you know, I got a sampling here. This one's called Going Off the Rails. You know this one, I'm sure.
Ooh, yeah.
All right, so let's we'll play a little bit of this one, and then we could talk about it. Bring that down a little bit so we can talk about it, but yeah, that definitely has that 80s sound to it.
It does. Well,
I was trying to get that big gothic guitar sound at the beginning. I couldn't decide whether I wanted to go dark and gothic or electronic, and electronic one out.
Let's see if I can get it down a little bit more. So did you create that on the Renoise?
Yeah.
I think that's just fantastic. There's a, to me, it seems like there's a resurgence of kind of the, when it comes to the retro stuff, to find to this kind of sound, it is making kind of a big comeback. I find myself listening to, you know, and looking up tracks, you know, wave synth kind of stuff, and this genre, this almost has its own genre, even though it's like video game music.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to include dubstep elements in there. There's some really grungy dubstep sounds. Gothic guitars, and there's beepy sounds as well.
Have you ever been contacted to make music for movies or shows other instead of just games?
No, I've had a couple of people use pieces of music I've written in films, but both the films, I've had my music in two films. One of them was about there was a horrible school shooting in Denmark, I think it was, and the killer walks around listening to the Hero Quest in-game music.
Oh, no. Oh, that's...
Which is... Okay. I mean, it worked. It was a nice, beautiful piano piece. And, you know, they used it in different areas. It was sad and stuff. But there was another one, a Brazilian film, where two guys have a dead hooker in the bathtub, and they sit and play Top Gear while they try to decide what to do with her.
Oh, are you serious?
So... getting your music used in a lot of popular positive environments,
art films.
But even like the intro of that last one, you know, I are you guys, you guys know what I'm talking about when you think about movie, you know, shows like Stranger Things and some of those where you've got this deep kind of retro electronica sound to it. Mm-hmm. A lot of the gaming music that I hear has that same similar vibe.
Right.
This also had, like you said, Barry, elements of like the dubstep and, you know, EDM kind of stuff. Is there,
I'm cringing now when I hear the beginning of that tune, that synth, oh, really? Sound that I used, I should have changed it to something else.
See, everyone's their own worst critic.
Yeah.
True.
Well, and I think Dave, from your perspective, Dave's a photographer, and it's, yeah, as an artist, you can kind of relate to that. This isn't exactly right. What I wanted. Meanwhile, everybody else is like, this is great.
Yeah. All you can do is keep it in mind for the next time you make something, you know, learn from, yeah, it and everything else. You know, the movies that popped into my head, you know, thinking about movies that would fit, kind of speaking of what you're talking about, Adam, was stuff like big flicks like Ready Player One,
yeah,
or Scott, totally, Pilgrim versus the World with that video game feel. That's that feeling, that like that genre, that when you hear this music, maybe it's because we all grew up on the games, you know.
Mm-hmm. It could be, yeah.
And hearing that, but it's just that it brings you back. I was listening to that sample and like, oh man.
It does bring you back.
Nice.
And I think that's an Steven, amazing point.
I was just going to say, if Steven Spielberg's listening and wants to use, yeah, my music in his shoots, in his films.
Well, it's a
if Steven Spielberg's
fact,
listening, I don't know what I do.
Hey,
right,
Steve,
now.
What's up? Call,
yeah,
me again.
I was going to say, it's a little known
call
fact.
Call me again.
He's one of our biggest fans. We chat all the time.
Yeah, right.
Secret,
Adam,
listener. Yeah,
that's the friend. You know, Adam said he was at a family thing. Quote, yeah, unquote. He was meeting with the Spielbergs, is what he was doing.
right. You know, it's so interesting to kind of go, oh, this song reminds me of those old games, when we have this exact same author and composer from the old, right, games that's,
yeah,
made this one. That's pretty incredible.
Well, and the question I had for you here, Barry, is kind of going back a little bit to the history. Now, you said you started off early, you know, working in these basic environments. What was the first game like? How did your break come into this? Like, how did you start getting into the world of this? You know, was there, mm-hmm, just stuff you started doing on your own, or did you?
Well, I was 14, yeah, 15 years old when I pretty much decided that I want to write music, mm-hmm, for video games, and my, sure, parents. I told my parents, and they're like, you're a moron. You're not going to write music for video games. Video games aren't even a thing. Don't be silly.
Yeah, right.
So I made all these tunes on the computer, and I sent demos to every game company in Britain. And
okay,
I called them all up, and I was an obnoxious little 15-year-old, 14, 15. And I was like, hey, you guys need to buy my music. It's awesome. And they're like, yeah, kid, your music sucks. We don't want it. And so I made, right, more tunes and sent them. And eventually one of them called me back and said, hey, you know, we've got this game where I think your music will suit it. So we'd like to buy it.
Sure.
What was that game, that first game there?
Icups, or Icups.
What is that game, by the way? Can you describe it?
It's a side shooter thing.
It's like a jet fighter game, isn't it?
Oh, I love side shooters.
Yeah. It's not that great, trust me.
Oh, okay. But I mean, in general, I do love
But the
sites.
Music was stellar.
No, the music really wasn't stellar.
he was trying to help you.
Well, I don't want anybody searching it on YouTube. And right. Like,
but that was your launching point there.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, when
ironically, from that very first game that was published, mm-hmm, the only feedback you would get then is from the magazines, when the magazines reviewed the game.
Sure.
And the big game magazine in Britain was Zap64. And they reviewed it, and they said the sound was terrible, and they gave it a rating of like 48% or something.
Oh, that's gotta hurt for, you know,
totally.
As a young kid reading about, you know, something
destroyed.
That you put a lot of time into.
Oh, totally destroyed. And after that was it. My career was over. I had written music for a video game, and I was done. So I went off, and I went to university. I was an apprentice engineer for Rolls-Royce for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And then I went to college. What else did I do? Oh, I did a computer training course that was a waste of time. And and then some of my buddies were making a video game, and they're like, do you want to do the music? And I said, sure, I'll do the music. And so I did that, and the magazine reviewed it, and it got like 83% for sound. Nice. So it's like, yes, I'm back in the game.
Sweet. What was that game?
Marauder. Marauder on the Commodore 64, published by Hewson Consultants.
See, I'm just, I'm, I never had a Commodore at all, and I only used the Amiga in my art class. So I'm like, you know, I just don't know anything about that world.
No, you missed out on a lot of games.
I know. I did have the Tandy color computer, though.
I don't think I've even seen one of those.
I think it was just a U.S. thing.
You're not impressing him, Jason.
Anyway. I kind of think Jason makes up these names sometimes.
No, that's an actual thing.
I know.
So, Barry, what are some of the projects you're working on right now? Or can you talk about any of those?
I'm not sure if I can talk. I'm working on one video game called The Story of a Gladiator, which is just a little indie title. I can't really talk about the toy stuff I'm working on.
But you're staying busy.
Yeah, it's been a quiet year so far, but things are picking up. Well, and I maybe I hope I'm not speaking too soon, but I got a project that revolves around remaking some of the Rush 2049 music. So
I played, which Rush was it? I can't remember which one it was, but and I believe it was on the N64 was where I played it. So was this first Rush on N64?
Rush, yeah, there was Rush, Rush 2, and Rush 2049. If the music sucked, it was Rush, the first one, because I didn't do that.
I think it was Rush 2, actually. And I do remember enjoying that game a lot. Like we discussed, I wasn't huge into racing games if it was, you know, not Mario Kart. But I did remember enjoying that one a little bit. I think it was just because the N64 was just such a big upgrade over like the Sega Genesis and the Super NES at that time. So just about anything I could get my hands on, I just loved. And I loved the four-player stuff. That was awesome.
Nice.
Oh, being that we're a tech podcast and stuff, you know, we always like to hit the techie side here. Now, I would love to know, what are the specs of your current rig that you use to create all your music?
Oh, sit down, boys, if I get a treat for you.
Woo!
I have, I just built this over Christmas there. It's a 2950X AMD CPU. I have two NVMe, 2 terabyte, SSDs in a RAID 0 array.
Oh, man.
I have another couple of SSDs for extra storage. 1080 Ti. I got a Steinberg UR22 for a sound card. And 64 gig of RAM.
Of course, you have to have a sound card. Nobody else does. We all just have the onboard, but... Yeah, of course, you know, so you need that.
You know, that 2950X is that Ryzen Threadripper that we talked about.
Oh, that's the Threadripper? I was going to ask how many cores you had. What is that, 32 cores, 64 threads?
Something like that. Let me pull up. Yeah, look.
Good Lord, 32, man.
16 cores, 32 threads.
Okay, and Adam, say it. Say it, Adam.
That's a lot of cores.
All right. So I had to say that. It's one of my things.
Yeah,
so
it's a catchphrase.
Three 27-inch monitors at...
yes.
Can't remember the resolution.
Sounds like an awesome rig. Do you do any gaming on those?
Yes,
I hope
do.
So, what games do you play?
I have been known to play a little bit of Supreme Commander 2, Forged Alliance, online still. And I was just playing Train Valley 2. I like that. It's a stupid puzzle game, but it's awesome.
Fun.
It's the sort of thing you can sit down and play for an hour and then get back to your work.
Supreme Commander 2, I haven't played that, but that one's gotten really positive reviews. That one came out a while
ago. Is that like a real-time strategy game?
Yes, it is the definitive real-time strategy game.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
And it's and it's got this add-on, Forged Alliance Forever, which makes it's a community-driven thing where they it just makes it really easy to download all the mods and maps and stuff, which keeps the game fresh.
That's awesome.
You know, I am going to have to try that game because I was always an RTS fan. I mean, I grew up, of course, on all the Command & Conquer games, StarCraft, all that type of stuff. And I have not played, I did recently install Warcraft 3 again. Not the remake that's coming out, the original. I'm digging it again. I want to get back into these RTSs.
Definitely Forged Alliance, man.
I'm going to have to try that. But hey, I got to tell a little story here since we're mentioning RTSs. So one of the big ones that we played was Command & Conquer Red Alert 2. And when this was out, this did allow online, LAN-type gaming, but you could do it online through a connection. And it was Dial-Upville when we were playing it. And my brother, a buddy, and I, and Adam knows who I'm talking about, we're all three managers at McDonald's at the time. We actually had three phone lines coming into our house. Three separate phone lines so that we could play head to head to head in the same house. We didn't want to have the computers connected together. We wanted to dial in on three different lines to play.
So cool.
Hey, Barry. Yeah. Every game company worked at, usually at 5 o'clock, that was when we started playing Red Alert on the LAN.
Right. Awesome. Hey, Barry, can you imagine with those three phone lines, just how those telemarketing calls were at that house?
Jeez, I can't imagine.
Yeah, you got to remember to disable that call waiting so it doesn't drop you when somebody calls.
Well, at least all three of you got your own separate bills for the 900 numbers. Anyway.
And phone lines are expensive back then.
Supreme Commander 2 is on sale right now on Steam for $13.
No, sweet. I might have to pick that
up. It's usually cheaper. You can usually pick it up for about $6 or $7. Take a look at some of those key websites.
Okay.
Yeah, like there's a few that Adam has used and has directed me to, and it's pretty sweet. Now, you mentioned this earlier, HeroQuest. And I was looking that up because I had remembered playing a HeroQuest, and no, it was completely different. I was playing the Sierra Online Heroes Quest, I figured out. HeroQuest is a little bit different. But looking at the screenshots and stuff, it actually looks a lot like an early version of Dark Quest 2.
Yeah. Dark Quest 2 bears more than a passing resemblance to the old HeroQuest games.
Oh, is it the same company? I was going to ask you that because I don't know anything about it.
No, it's not the same company. It's just a guy that was really passionate about HeroQuest. He wanted to remake it.
Oh, that's hilarious. Now, I did look at his screenshots of Dark Quest 1, which is completely different. It's, almost looks like little card play, moving around a dungeon instead of like a 3D, actual.
It's a turn-based thing. I mean, we've been talking about Dark Quest 3, but it's such a huge investment in artwork and stuff to make it all fluid and 3D characters and stuff. It's tricky.
And I think I might want to give it a try because that's the type of game that I do like. Yeah. Hey, let's listen to a little sample that you did for Dark Quest 2, all right?
Okay.
Definitely digging that, man. There's like so many layers to that.
Yeah, I was going through a bit of an orchestral phase.
Not a lot of people say that. That was back in my orchestral phase.
I got involved with the Video Games Live guys, and I did an arrangement of Top Gear and Horizon Chase for them. And it was really inspiring to hear a piece of music played by an orchestra.
I can imagine.
When I came back, I was all excited, started doing more orchestral stuff.
Now, it just amazes me how you're able to compose this on a computer. And it's something that I've always wanted to do. I think back to the only time I was ever able to actually create little pieces of music, and it was a PS1 game called MTV Music Generator. And I don't know, are you familiar with that at all, Barry?
Yeah, I remember hearing about it.
And I used to think I was a genius, some of the stuff that had created on that, and then we'd save it to our memory card and, you got to check out the latest thing I made. And I know Dave, he was creating a lot of music on it too.
Right.
And it was just so easy just, to paste, it into there and the different stanzas and everything, and not George. But it was just, I loved it. It was so much fun.
Yeah,
I wish that there
were creative.
Yeah, I wish there was something as simple for idiots like me nowadays. But the closest I can get is GarageBand, and it still seems so complicated compared to that MTV music generator. Do you have any recommendations on a piece of software for a dummy that wants to create music?
I know Fruity Loops is pretty advanced, but I think you can do an awful lot in it. It's probably as complex as GarageBand and stuff. I don't know. It's the low end of the scale is not what I'm used to using.
So what you're saying is I have to buy a PS1 again and another copy of MTV Music Generator.
I'm sure you can download an emulator.
I think what he's saying is maybe you should just, take an actual training course on some of these tools.
Right.
Just play around in one.
I'm 48. I can't take no more courses.
I'm 48 as well. Yeah, I'm not learning anything new.
Tricks. Yeah, but this isn't new tricks to you. This is old tricks you've been doing for 30 something years.
Yeah, true.
But he's had to adapt to all these different technologies too.
Yeah, technology's moved on so much.
No, this is the same as the 286 days without a math coprocessor. A math coprocessor. I'm sorry, I'm drinking a lot of Diet Dr. Pepper right now.
You have to think, in those first 5 or 6 years of the game industry, I mean, from when I joined it, like 85, 86 to 90, 92, in that period of time, we went from single-channel beeps to full CD soundtracks. I mean, that was a hell of a leap, and there was every iteration, you know, 3 channels, square wave, the 4-channel samples on the Amiga. The Super Nintendo had like 6 or 8 channels of really small samples. And then you had sound cards like the PC, the MT32, it was like a little synthesizer. Sound Canvas, Adlib sound cards, FM based. The Genesis was FM as well.
You're bringing back some memories here for me, because I remember my very first PC. You know, I just had the internal beep, beep, you know, just a little internal speaker. And then when I purchased my first Sound Blaster 16, it was like, hey. It was amazing. I mean, I went from beep beeps to full vocal speaking. I don't know how many, you know, channels it could do. Probably, what was it, maybe 4, 8?
I think it was about 11.
11?
It was FM based.
But, I mean, it was amazing compared to that little beep beep from the internal speaker.
Yeah. But compared to the MT32, it totally sucked.
Who made that?
Roland. Which is why in the very early 90s, people were spending $800 on an MT32 and another couple of hundred on a Sound Blaster. So they'd use the Sound Blaster for digital speech and the MT32 for music. Games like Wing Commander, Strike Commander, Privateer, all those Origin games.
Now, I played the Wing Commander series, specifically 2 and 3, and it looks like you had done music for those also, right?
I edited the dialogue on Wing Commander 3. There was 11,500 lines of dialogue in that damn game, and I had to edit each single one.
Now, being that you were editing the dialogue, did you get to meet Luke Skywalker?
They brought him to the office one day, and they walked him around, and we all waved at
him. So you seriously got to meet him?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool. That was really cool. Adam doesn't even know why I mentioned that with him, but he was actually in that game.
Well, I assumed that.
I remember how awesome that was. That was that was full motion video cutscenes, and it was actually a pretty stupid story, but I mean, it was pretty cool seeing it. Mark Hamill in anything at that point was pretty dang cool.
Yeah, at the time, that was the most expensive video game ever made. I think it was, I'm trying to remember, whether it was $7 million or something.
Jeez.
Wow.
And $6 million of it went to Mark Hamill.
And Chris Roberts. No, but they had almost the whole company working on it at one point. Everybody in Origin Systems, they were just trying to get out the door as quick as they could and make the deadlines. So there was about 150, 200 people towards the end.
Wow. I'm almost wondering if they put more time and energy into the production of the cutscenes than they did in the actual game.
Well, that was all done out of house, and then, you know, it had to be brought back and stripped down. I think at the time there wasn't the CD-ROMs couldn't transfer enough data to have the full resolution picture, so they'd have to strip out every second line of video to.
Yeah, I think when that came out, I mean, they were literally 2x. I think was the speed of the drives, and I mean that's. God, I couldn't even imagine trying to burn something to 2X drive anymore, and that was my first burner, was 2X. I think it took a half hour.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to ask, just because, you know, I look at, you know, just the great wealth of work you've done here. Out of all of these games that you did, which one brings you the most pride and joy? If somebody was to say, hey, Barry, which one of these games is the epitome of your skill? This is the one that defines who you are. What do you think you would say?
I think it's got to be Horizon Chase Turbo. Just because of for the first time, I didn't really have anybody monitoring what I was doing. I mean, they were monitoring, they had to approve everything, but they just kind of gave me free rein. And I hadn't done that since a title like TFX, which was another one that I was really proud of.
And the TFX, what is that?
It's a flight sim on the PC.
Oh, okay.
For motion software.
You know what? I do, now that you've mentioned what it was, I do think I remember that. At least seeing ads in it, you know, like in the back of the computer magazines.
Yeah, I don't think it sold very well in America. It was certainly fairly popular in Europe and stuff. I still get emails from people in Europe about it.
All right, well, I have to go the other way too here, Barry, and you know. Out of all these games that you produced music for, which one are you most embarrassed of that, you know, you wish that you could just wipe it from the history of what you have
maybe
done?
Maybe he doesn't want to say that one.
But yeah, I think he's brave enough to let us know which one he really doesn't care for.
I don't know. Hiccup sucked an awful lot. There's quite a lot of them that sucked. I mean, American Gladiators on the Super Nintendo. I got to listen to that on YouTube a few weeks back, and I was like, holy cow, the bass line is actually out of tune by a few semitones. How did nobody notice this?
Well, and then I wouldn't notice because I don't have ear for that. But
now
I
got to go listen to it.
I was thinking back to when we developed it, and I remember having the source code and putting the music into the source code, giving it to the programmer, and he would play it on his little TV in his office. And, you know, you got to think it's a little 11-inch TV that has this little speaker with no bass. So I'm there in a noisy office, you know, trying to press my ear against the speaker on the TV, trying to hear it, and I couldn't hear the bass line, so that was how that slipped through. I can't believe nobody else said, wait a minute, the bass line's out of tune.
Well, maybe you're just surrounded by yes men and they didn't want to, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that's a question that I wanted to ask you, a little bit about the process side of things. When you're working on a game like this, I imagine it's different, you know, from, say, you know, maybe like a racing type game versus a side-scrolling platform or whatever it is. How much in advance and how closely do you work with the story team or the that side of things with the game to plan out, like, okay, we want to hit certain peaks here when this thing's happening or that thing's happening, or do they just let you do it and they fit things around that?
Well, with a driving game, it's really hard to predict when something's going to happen. There's no real timeline. I mean, I could write it all interactively. I mean, we did some interactive music at Origin years ago. And I never liked interactive music. It never sounds great to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never walk away afterwards thinking, I want to get that music and listen to it in my car.
Right.
but I mean, there's times when I do work pretty closely with the team and we try different things out, like with the story of a gladiator, we've been having some fun trying things out in the game to see what works and what doesn't, and when I should write a big piece of music and when I should just write a little simple drum beat and stuff.
Sure. Yeah. It seems like, you know, a lot of that's going to depend obviously on the game. You know, I know you weren't a part of this game, but it's a game that pops into mind. I was playing it recently on my NES Classic Mini, putting some time into Castlevania. So when you look at a game like that, you know, you see as you get to certain parts of the level, the music's changing and hitting certain notes to let you know kind of, okay, you're getting close, or this is the boss fight, or this is what's going on here. And I was just curious to see how much they tell you ahead of time, you know, okay, here's what's going to happen. We need the music at some point to go from the looping into this different thing, you know, shifting for each level or whatever it might be.
Well, I mean, traditionally you would have had a level tune and then an end of level boss tune and then either success or fail.
Sure.
You know, so I mean, there's some interactivity that way on a very basic level. I mean, you can go down, I mean, these days you can go down to the very macular level and have the music basically continue without you ever noticing, without it ever missing a beat.
Right.
And morph into the next piece of music.
Sure. Man, that's fascinating, the planning.
So besides keyboard, do you play other instruments as well?
No. Don't play keyboard either. I make no claims or guarantees.
No, you play the keyboard.
Yeah, bang on it.
No, so, I mean your keyboard on the computer.
Oh, you mean my Ducky Shine keyboard. That's worth mentioning.
Ducky Shine.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. King of keyboards, the Cadillac.
I do not get the reference. I am an idiot.
They're
so you guys were tech guys. Yeah. I thought you guys were tech guys.
It's like a high-end mechanical keyboard.
Beautiful. Well, that's I'm not with musical.
No, it's, yeah. it's a typing keyboard, Jason.
It's just like you would use.
Well, not musical.
I only buy keyboards by the company ValueTech.
Yeah, right.
So Barry, when you're creating your music, are you on the computer now with your DAW? Are you drawing notes on here? Are you programming
I use keyboard. The way Tracker System works is you just use the computer keyboard to type in notes. Okay. It's a real time step display system or step. I've forgotten the phrase they use for it. Okay. But I don't like using the mouse because it's really slow having to draw notes in and stuff.
Sure, I know. A lot of with the advent of cheap MIDI controllers and things like that, I use a keyboard through a MIDI controller into my computer, and I can actually, you know, you can hit record and you can record MIDI, and then you can go back in and correct where you've made a mistake or quantize.
Yeah, see, that would take me forever fixing all the mistakes.
Yeah, I'm not a huge keyboard player either, but I was just curious how you're actually making it on there. So.
I was just thinking for Jason there, you could get the Easy Piano for the Nintendo, is it DS?
Yeah.
I did the music for that one. You can play the piano along with the... Yep.
I think they make a My Little Pony model too, Jason.
Sweet! Unfortunately, I don't have a musical bone in my body. I've made a couple compositions for the show, all comedy-wise, but... I'm not skilled in musical ability.
You
at
know,
all.
I wasn't when I started either. I mean, I go back and
listen. Oh, stop it. You've been making stuff since you've been 15 earlier.
For the first the first 5 years. Maybe it took me 5 years, I think, before I wrote anything that was listenable that wasn't totally bad.
Bad.
Spad to the bone.
But I think, you know, I mean, over time you learn what works and what doesn't work, and you can expand on it there.
Probably the closest I've come to making anything that sounds even close to video game-ish is our intro.
Yeah, I'm going to have to have a listen to
that. Our 80s intro. I think that's the one that we'll use on this show. So.
Yeah. We're using it every show, right, Dave?
Okay. Sure.
I did it last week, but you didn't listen to the show, right, Adam?
Yes, I sure did.
I sure did?
I sure... Shut up. Okay, Ducky Shine. Anyway.
Oh, speaking of that, $200 for a keyboard? Are you serious?
It's worth every penny.
Yeah. My
what
goodness.
Do you find the big difference is, you know, what advantages do you get over a mechanical keyboard? I haven't used one.
The click is the best.
The impressive amount of stuff that it holds under the keys when you turn it upside down and shake it.
Now, do you bang on it a little bit when you're doing that?
Oh, yeah, it's all sorts of shit. The stuff falls out, yeah. But it has LEDs. It lights up. That's the big thing for me.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I just purchased a new keyboard, and it's one of those... keyboards that are supposed to give you that mechanical like feel, but it's not like cherry switches or anything. And it lights up just like this one I'm looking at here. It's just rainbowed across. It's pretty decent, but I only paid like $50 for it.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a tax deduction. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Now, can you actually program the lights for it to help you do your work?
No.
Oh, because that'd be totally cool.
I know. I think the new versions, you can do fancier stuff, but. Nice. I can't bring myself to buy another one.
Well, maybe a listener of the show will be like, hey, let's buy Barry a new keyboard.
Yeah, if Ducky Shine wanted to send me one, I'll wear a Ducky t-shirt.
I'd love to have one of these.
The keyboard I did buy, I didn't even think about it, but it's kind of funny. It's called the Monkey Shine.
Are you making this up? Is this a joke, or are you for real?
Yes, Drunk Dave, it's a joke.
So Barry, I don't know if you're hearing that either, but once in a while in cast, in what we're recording in, it'll, for just some reason, just Dave, it'll either slow down or speed up his voice to accommodate for latency.
I thought it was just a little special.
Woo! Is it just the thing? Oh, it was hilarious, Dave. I wish you would have heard it. Anyway.
I wish it recorded it so we could play it for Dave once in a while. It is like...
That was really
and especially
funny.
The micro machines, it's like...
Okay. Anyway, how about we stop wasting Barry's time and ask him a real question, Jason?
We have never wasted Barry's time.
hearing your impersonation of Micro Machines Man.
It was just pretty good. You liked it, Barry?
I thought it was great. Barry, are you still there?
It was special.
Yeah, a little bit special. Going through this list of games here, I have noticed something, you know, kind of different, because you don't think about music that much in these type of games, but you've actually done quite a few different sports games. I see some soccer games here, and I even see you did Greg Norman's Golf Power.
Yeah, we don't like to talk about that one because it wasn't very good.
Now, I don't specifically remember this game that well, or its music, of course, but when you're doing like a sports game, is it just a lot like doing a racing game, or do you come at it a little bit different?
It depends. I mean, I mean, on Wayne Gretzky, when I was at Atari, I did Wayne Gretzky's 99, which never got released. But we ended
did
up
you still get paid?
Yeah, I was in there, good, so I got paid just to show up. But, I had to write all this death metal for it. They just wanted this crazy guitar stuff. Other times, there was a football game on Facebook that I did the music for, and that was so easy to write. It just wrote itself. It was a nice, happy soccer tune, you know.
Well, and that's always good when it writes itself and you still get totally. Credit for it.
Yeah.
How about, I see a number of games on the list of, you know, things you've done that have very recognizable, theme songs. Things like Batman, Wheel of Fortune, you know, things like that. How much do you get to play with those theme songs, RoboCop, as far as putting your own twist on them versus do they basically tell you, okay, these things have to be this?
It's very rare that we would actually get the rights to use licensed music from a title like that. Mm-hmm. The strange one was Wheel of Fortune. And I was living in Britain at the time, and we'd never seen Wheel of Fortune. It just doesn't air over there. Sure. And they sent us this sheet music, and it was a single note for the melody. It was just, all I had was the melody line. And so I had no idea what the backing for it sounded like. So it just had the melody and the chord. So I just laid down this simple thing and we put it in the game, and it sounds really bad, but it was there.
It's horrible. Hey, now, speaking of something awesome here, this is straight off of, well, it's from Horizon Chase Turbo, but it's a little something, he added a little extra to this, and you know, I listened to this track a couple of times, and I really liked it. The guys haven't heard it, so let me go ahead and play this real fast. I thought that sounded really cool. So, now that wasn't actually released on anything. You just did that fun?
That was just fun. It just happened to come across a little stash of things on the internet. One of them was the vocal track for that, so I snarfed it and recreated the music. Nice.
I love how it fit in there perfectly. It sounded really cool.
Thanks. It's on my SoundCloud page if anybody wants to listen to it.
That industrial sound to it.
Mm-hmm. And then,
the awesome Lemmy, yeah.
He's dead now.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I call him the skin tag kid. But,
bad joke.
It's not a bad joke. Jeez, trying to add a little
anyway.
Humor. This gentleman has passed, and I'm trying to add some humor.
By making fun of his appearance.
So, I got to ask you real fast. The game, The President Is Missing. What kind of music did you do for this? Like, really ominous?
No, it was just Hail to the Chief. It was just something we threw in quickly. What's messed up, right? I was back in Scotland during when September the 11th happened. And of course, they canceled all the flights back and stuff. And eventually I managed to get a flight back to, well, it was Toronto that I flew to. And I had to drive from Toronto and down to Buffalo, which meant going through the customs. And of course, as you can imagine, customs on September the 17th or whatever it was, were just mental. So they're going through all the cars, and he opens up my bags. Now, I'd been back seeing my parents, and they had some old video games that I worked on, and one of them was The President Is Missing. Found this game, and oh my God, he went ballistic. What is this? What's the significance of this? What do you mean by this? What are you planning? Where are you from? Oh my God.
Secret Service.
Oh, he went, it's just nuts. I'm like, dude, it's a video game I worked on years ago.
Jeez, I could imagine if you would have had the movie, The Dead Presidents.
Oh, I can only imagine. No sense of humor, but quite rightly so.
So, what else do you want to know from Mr. Barry?
What's next? I mean, you've got some projects. Are you planning on just sticking in this space and keeping on doing the games because that's kind of the passion, or are there further expansion?
It's really, really difficult to make money doing audio. I've been lucky that I've found a bit of a niche with doing toy audio, which is incredibly technical. And, you know, these little toy products that, I mean, they have similarities with the old computer chips from 1990s and stuff, but there's a whole science behind getting audio to sound good on them. So I found a little niche doing that. It kind of keeps me out of trouble for the most part. Come along and stuff.
What kind of toys have you done, actually, that we might know over here?
How old are you?
48. Years young.
You guys got any kids that are... some of you have. Like things like the Ocean Wonders Aquarium by Fisher-Price. All the Ocean Wonders stuff. Okay. Bright Starts. Pixter was a big one.
I don't know any of that.
Baby Einstein.
I remember that.
Oh, I remember Baby Einstein.
Ocean Wonders Aquarium. That was the that one went in the crib, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And that was, I mean, you think about how many video games sell units. Those toys, the Ocean Wonders Aquarium's like 4.5 million units.
Oh, right.
Jeez, I hope you're getting residuals.
Oh, hell no.
Every time a baby listens, he gets a cut.
you need a better agent.
Yeah, no, definitely. So
that's amazing.
When it comes to the toys, I mean, from everything you named there, it didn't click any boxes as far as anything I remember being super annoying. But are you behind any... what I'm getting at, I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but are you behind any of those toys that make parents want to pull out their hair and throw it in the garbage?
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's
guaranteed.
I have to write what I'm told to write. You know, they want a 15-second happy tune that repeats. I mean, they're going to get that.
Well, now let's be honest. Do you take any joy out of knowing that it's going to, when you make something, you're like, oh, this is good. I'm proud of it, and it's exactly what they wanted me to write. But I know parents are going to be driven crazy by this thing, and it, like, is it fun?
Sometimes. I mean, I try not to drive people crazy. I try and do creative things because there's always a big back and forwards between marketing departments.
Right.
Marketing people hate for you to have a minor chord in a children's toy.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Because, it's sad. It's not sad. It's just gone into a minor chord for a minute. It's going to go back to a major one in a minute. But they just, they all flip out and they make you change it. But every now and again, I get to sneak one in. When I was at Fisher-Price, I managed to get Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata into a toy, which was a big thing. And I did manage to get Bach's Toccata in D minor in a toy once, which I was so pleased with.
So that's very awesome. Rare.
Yeah, yeah, that has to be under the radar.
You know, that's but really, it worked beautifully. I've never thought about that.
It worked awesomely, and everybody liked it, which was weird, so...
Wonderful.
All right, let's head back to the tech side here real fast. And I just have to ask, because we had a guest on last month, actually, and he was really big into the Amiga. And that was specifically for gaming and stuff. Now, you were really big into the Amiga also, but from more of the creative side, creating the music. Amiga was not that huge in the U.S., at least in the areas that I was at. But it was pretty big over, like, in the UK and stuff. Oh, am I
huge.
Correct?
Yeah, totally huge. That's because people could copy games on the Amiga. The Super Nintendo never took off because you couldn't copy cartridges.
So it was all about piracy, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we couldn't afford a Super Nintendo and we worked on games, you know?
So I don't remember the Super Nintendo being that expensive.
It was in the UK. I mean, it was like £30 a game, which is what, it was about $50, $60 at the time.
Maybe it was. I just don't remember it being that expensive, I guess.
It was expensive. We were only making £5,000-£6,000, but $10,000 a year, so we weren't. We were barely paying our rent and stuff when we worked in the game.
But it cost a living. I mean, you could buy, you know, a house for probably like, what, £5,000?
No. Dear God.
This wasn't the talking Great out Depression. Of his rear end.
Yeah, it's not that long ago, man. It's the 80s and 90s.
Back in the day.
It wasn't the 70s. 70s, you could get a house for $3,000. Not in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
Oh, I miss the 70s. It was a great time.
Yeah.
When you were what, 5?
I was in 1979. I was 8.
Buying houses and
oh yeah,
soaking up real estate.
At 8 years old, probably definitely keen in the economy.
Right. Yeah, we were first the last ex-wife by 8.
We were the last generation to play outside. You know.
Yeah.
Well, that was my generation.
Yeah. My kids play outside, so you know we kick them out all the time.
Yeah.
Go in the yard. Play in the yard.
What did I see the other day? There was someone told their kid to go play outside, and he had set up a card table outside and put his laptop on it.
Oh, jeez.
That sounds like my kids. when I have to ground them, I just cut their Wi-Fi off, and they hate right. it. Yep. It's the worst thing.
It's got to be effective.
Yep, yeah. Just change the Wi-Fi password, and then once they do what they're supposed to do, then you give them the password for that day.
There's always tears.
And tantrums, probably. So all of a sudden stuff's getting broken and that's just you. Yeah. It's like, oh, Wi-Fi, I can't remember the password. Something like that.
Jason's impersonations.
I know, so pretty good, huh?
So on point.
Hey, so Adam, you had an impersonation you wanted to do. Let's hear it.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did. I told him how good your Arnold Schwarzenegger was. We want to hear it.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
So, Barry, tell me about the games.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. I always thought it was pretty good, but I guess
no,
not.
That one was terrible.
Yeah, try to do it a little bit better.
I can't do it on the fly like that, Jason. You know.
Oh, my gosh. You should be able to do anything on command.
Don't tell me what to do.
That's not even close either. I'm
okay, Christopher Walken, go.
Stop it. No.
Hey, Barry, do you do any impersonations?
No.
None?
No.
That's the wise answer.
Yes, exactly.
I've been saying that for over 2 years.
See, I tried, I failed, and yet it's still going to be stuck in this podcast for eternity on the internet.
Yes! So.
The trick is to swear and then he'll cut it out. So I'm told.
Well, you see, I tried that once. A true story. I thought, well, there's a section Adam wanted cut out. And Jason was threatening, he's not going to do it, I'm not going to, oh, I'm leaving it in. So I just went on a big F-bomb tirade thinking, okay, now you got to cut this out. And all he did is just kind of halfways bleep me out and left it in the episode. So it sounds like I just go on some random, you know, furious F-bomb.
Drug-induced rant.
Right. So I always that even that didn't even work for me.
Oh, well, Barry, we want to express our appreciation for your time today. We really are glad that you are on the podcast with us. And I just think this was a phenomenal conversation. It's so interesting to hear from someone that's creating and everyone has heard, even if they haven't actually heard of you. I think that's just fantastic.
Yeah. I hope it was entertaining.
Most definitely. Most definitely. So, so the three of us at Digital Soup want to thank the audience for listening. And as always, you can hit us up at digitalsouppodcast.com where you can find anything about us. Now, Barry, can you tell us how our listeners can reach out to you online or find you?
You can head over to barryleitch.com, L-E-I-T-C-H. And there's links there to my Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud. And you can buy CDs, signed CDs of the Horizon Chase Turbo soundtrack. Available for the low, low price. $15 for the USA, $20 for the rest of the world.
All right, cheaper for USA.
USA!
Yeah, but what's the conversion rate? Anyway, So, listeners, you can subscribe to all of us here at the Digital Soup Podcast anywhere where you listen to podcasts. And so we'd love if you told a friend about us, went in iTunes and left a great review or whatever it is. Let us know if you want to hear more conversations like this wonderful one we just had with Barry. From all of us at the Digital Soup Podcast, to all of you, stay safe, have an awesome week. We'll catch you next time, and thanks again, Barry.
Cheers.
Thanks for coming on. Take care, guys.
Later, Gators.